All right, guys. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
We're going to open this meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. All right, so welcome to the meeting. This is Relationships in Recovery. I'm going to read you a few things first, and this is a press media statement. Statement to members regarding the press. As our 11th tradition says, our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. The primary purpose of our public relations efforts is to tell the story of Narcotics Anonymous and what our program offers to the still suffering addict. Members of the press are sometimes attracted to our convention, and we welcome their interest. However, we do not disclose our last names in the media as identifiable members of Narcotics Anonymous. If a member of the press approaches you, please direct them to the chair or the vice chair of the convention. Statement to the media. If any members of the media are present, we ask you to contact the chair or vice chair of the convention for information. Okay, and this is a social media statement. The widespread use of social media networking and social media by our fellowship indicates that these forums are resources that can serve to facilitate greater communication and interaction among Narcotics Anonymous members. With that being said, some of our members may not want to be depicted in photos on social media platforms. Please be mindful of this and get permission from members if you intend to post their photos on any type of social media. And this is a clarity statement because we like to be clear. Okay. At NA meetings, we introduce ourselves as addicts. When members introduce themselves as addicts and alcoholics, or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that somehow one drug is separate from the rest, requiring special recognition. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive in reference to the disease of addiction, allowing us to focus on our similarities, not our differences. All right, so now we have the reading. Somebody will read for us who is an addict.
I am Simon, an addict.
Hi, Simon.
Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking is centered in drugs in one form or another. The getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same.
All right, next we will read, why are we here?
Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of the NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibility, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us were lusted in our addiction. We were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until in desperation we sought help from each other and Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffer from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point and recovery is then possible.
Thank you, Angel. All right, so our topic is relationships and recovery, and we have two fantastic speakers to share with us. I don't know what area. Are you from Pittsburgh? What area?
My name is Irene. I'm from Pittsburgh area, Passon. And
so this is Irene from Passon. She's our first speaker.
My name is Irene. I'm an addict. My home group is a place to go. It meets at the Camel Club on Sundays at 10:30. And it's a really good meet. And the 25th, we're having our anniversary. A lot of people. Clean date is October 28th, 1989. By God's grace, we celebrate 33 years in October. All right. A gift, a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful gift from God. This program just did. All that I am, everything that's going on in my life, my heart, my soul, my spirit, it all is because of what God has done in my life. And what this program has allowed me, and this program that has allowed me to change and grow, heal, and become a better woman. I have a lot of relationships in my life. For me, the first relationship has always been God. Even before I got here, my journey into Narcotics Anonymous was through prayer. I didn't go through detox or rehab. But I detoxed right in the rooms from Narcotics Anonymous. But my last night of using, last night of using 33 years ago, Angel was with me. That was my partner in crime 33 years ago. And Lord, how God has brought me so far. I am from Camden, New Jersey. I've been in Pittsburgh 35 years. I came here to give my children a better chance at life, because Camden, New Jersey is across the bridge from Philadelphia. For those that don't know, it's across the Ben Franklin Bridge from Philadelphia, and it's when I grew up, it wasn't bad. I was a preacher's granddaughter in the neighborhood we grew up in. We didn't even know we were poor or whatever, and you know, you couldn't do nothing, because by the time you got from one corner to the next, they told your parents already before you got home. But you know, raising my kids, it was very difficult in that environment to raise my kids. I have twin sons. They're 57. I have a daughter that's 52. And a little bit later on, I'll tell you about another daughter that I have. She's 60. She just turned 60. I'm 77. With good health, and God's been, let me tell you, for my relationship with God is so powerful that my last night of use, and I just got on my knees, I prayed and I asked God to help me, and I fell asleep on my knees, and when I woke up, the phone woke me up. This was after Angel left. And I woke up and the phone rang, and it was a friend of mine that I hadn't seen for over a year, and she called to check on me, and she was in recovery, and I hadn't seen her for a year, you know, but that night God chose her to be my angel, and she said, get dressed, and I'm going to pick you up in a couple hours. I said, where are we going? She said, you're going to a meeting. I'm like, oh, did I need my resume? I got a good resume.
No, you don't need no resume.
I didn't know where I was going. I never heard of an NA or AA meeting. And she came and picked me up, and she had like maybe five other people in the car, and somebody gave their seat up for me. And I'm the only one left that was in that car. You know what I mean? She was my best friend in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. But all of them was my friends, you know, but it was their turn to transition. Like we all get a turn, you know. For me, death was part of it. So for me, God has been my friend. I got clean here in Pittsburgh, but even when I was using, I knew that my kids, I found a gun underneath of my kids' pillows when they were like 13 or 12, and I was afraid, you know, I was afraid that they were going to die in Camden, you know. So immediately I started the ball rolling and trying to, you know, make arrangements to relocate them, and we went to Atlanta first, and I worked. Wherever we went, I worked, you know. I was married a couple times. That didn't last. I married guys that were like 15 years older than me who were very obedient, and they had enough love for both of us. I really don't want to get married, but I had twins, right? So, so the guys had enough love for me and them. So I married, and it didn't last long, but they were good guys. You know, they were good guys. They taught my son some things that a woman couldn't teach him. But it was difficult because I raised them alone. I didn't have family there. My grandmother had died. She had died and left me a house. And I partied. You know, I started working at RCA Government in Camden because we had relatives there. You could get in places as cider and wine inside of TVs and barmaid at night. You know, I couldn't wait to get out of Reverend Wright's house. And so whatever he had told me not to do, you know, I went straight there. You know. I was the life of the party. I loved barmaid. Because in Jersey, it was like Teddy Pendergrass, Blue Notes, you know, all the singers, you know, they came to the club and party. And then in Jersey, after hours, you had a party came after the bar closed. You know, they had car parties and all night parties. You know. Lord have mercy, where we have to think of it. But, I did. I partied a lot, but I worked a lot. I had God put a lot of people in my life that helped me with my kids. A lot of angels. There are people that just made me part of their family, our extended family. So God was my friend, is my best friend. My next best friend in recovery was my sponsor. And my sponsor was Esther, and she was a blind lady. Esther was blind, and she was Dot Talley's sponsor. Not y'all are very young, but some of y'all might remember Dot Talley. Esther was blind and she was Dot Talley's sponsor. She'd drive me to Ohio. I'd be driving her to Ohio. She'd be like, baby, you're going the wrong way. I'm like, you're blind, Esther. And she's like, well, I can tell from the bumps in the road. She was so funny, but she would cuss me out in a minute if you weren't right. But I learned a lot, and the biggest gift that she and Dot gave me was the gift of gratitude. Because she would wake up in the morning and we would talk every morning. We'd do our readings together, we'd talk, and she would always be like, oh, the sky is beautiful, the birds are singing, the sun feels so good. And like every morning, I mean, she was always like this. She was so appreciative of life, even though she was blind. You know what I mean? And she was so smart. and so they passed that on to me, the gift of gratitude. You know, because she was always grateful. You know, and blind. How do you are you blind and grateful? But she could see. She helped me to see things that I couldn't see with my eyes. She helped me to see with my heart. You know. And they loved me. They loved me to death, her and Dot. And they took me everywhere and did everything. By the time I had 9 months, I did my steps because I didn't go to rehab or detox. So I came right into the rooms reading, and I like to read. So I wanted to know what the program was about. So they didn't have no trouble with me. I wanted to be. It was a good place to be. When I got here, I went to wake up and they was dancing and howling and singing, and it was the day before Thanksgiving. I just could not believe that people live like that. You know, I'm like, they got something in them. And then to make it so that the next day was Halloween and you had this big party and everybody was all dressed up. My friend that was with us, Joanne, she was a bag lady. And she had toilet paper hanging off of her and a pillow up here. I mean, they had so much fun. I had fun. And that was my introduction to recovery. And I made friends with my sponsor after a long period of time. We were friends. But more than anything, I loved and respected her. I want to read something from the book. I got my cute glasses on. I meant to bring my others. The people in our lives are the means by which we experience grace. We see the miracle change in others, and they reflect our own change back to us. They are windows through which we see the world and vehicles by which we achieve spiritual progress. Mm-hmm. And the spiritual principles and the wounds, let me tell you, welcome newcomers. Anybody that's new, welcome. Please keep coming back. Let me tell you, I could never have dreamed of the life that God has given me in the world. I have been so abundantly blessed. When I first came in, Nina, I love you, Nina. When I first came in, Delphine used to tell me, "I am so tired of your happy ass." She said, "You really get on my nerves." I said, "Well, give me your phone number so I can call you when it's not happy. I mean, let me be the first one to cuss you out." But I'm from Canton. I was happy to be in a safe place, to know that there was a solution to my problem, to know that there were other people that were going through the same things that I went through, to know that I wasn't a bad person, to know that I had another shot at life. Man, that was exciting for me. I don't care about y'all. See, didn't nobody make me come in. I came in by the grace of God. By God's grace, I was chosen. Mm. He favored me. Mm. He knew. I buried my grandmother before I left Jersey, and she told me how people would be at the funeral. She said, "And don't be grieving for me a long time." She said, "You grieve a little bit, let me go, because you know I'm sick." She said, "And I'll be watching you from heaven." Mm. You know, she said, "But don't continue to grieve because I can't rest in peace." Mm. You know, so that's given me a different look in my heart and my soul. I have a different outlook on death. You know what I mean? And I follow what she says because I know she's been watching out for me. You know, I was 16 in Jersey. I got so many friends and relations. I was 16 in Jersey and I got pregnant at a young age. I'm molested at a young age by my uncle, but that was something different. But that interrupted my innocence. My family put me in an unwedded mother's home because you couldn't get into school. Women couldn't go back to school in those days. And so they sent me to Atlantic City. I had tutors, and I was in an unwedded mother's home. And they made me get my baby up for adoption. There was no questions about it. I had no choice. They were going to put her in a foster home. They threatened to put her in a foster home if I didn't give her up. Hardest thing I ever have done in my whole life. You hear me? The hardest thing, you know. And the next hardest thing would be raising them 4 kids by myself. But they're all successful now. But so I had to put her up for adoption, And I prayed for her, and I would see people pushing strollers down the street after I got back in school. You know, I got back in school when everything went back to normal. And just to see somebody with a stroller, I wanted to peep in there and see if that was my baby, you know what I mean? And 16, I had a hard time. It just broke my heart, you know. But then I had to surrender, and I had to have some acceptance, you know, that I couldn't continue like that because I was driving myself crazy. So, of course, I went on partying because now I got a hole from where I've been molested. I got a hole in there where I've been raped. I've got a hole in my gut where they took the baby from me, the hole where they think I'm less than and I ain't this and I ain't that, although everybody that had a baby in the family except me, you know, but just all this here and not knowing that that's where the pain and the hurt and the emptiness in my spirit was coming from. I didn't know, you know what I mean? I was getting high not knowing that I was trying to fill a void, you know what I mean? And try not to think about that baby, you know, or being raped at a young age and threatened and all that. But I just need to make it short and let you know that when I had 19 years clean, I worked in recovery too. And I worked with the women that were on methadone, that were giving their babies back. You know, and they go through the methadone program and different programs. I work with women and babies and these people, and I would tell them my story, you know what I mean? But lo and behold, 19 years clean, God brought my daughter back into my life. Mm. She found me after 46 years. Mm. You want to talk about miracles up in here? You want to talk about blessings, you know? You can't tell me not to believe. See, I ain't the one. You know what I mean? I believed anyway when I came in here, but when God brought me my daughter back after 46 years, you hear me? Through the internet. It was on television. Mary Rob Jackson came and did our story. And another newscaster came and did my story. We were at my daughter. I invited them to all to come to my daughter's house. I had it all planned. One of my friends, this is recovery, she said, put a blast out, Irene, call the newspaper. I did everything she told me to do. And my daughter said, you had the TV station come here to my house? I'm like, oh, I had two of them come. She lived at Monroeville, she got a humongous house, right? She said, you don't let two come at one time. But then she knew one of the cameramen, and then Mary Rob Jackson brought her pictures of her daughter, who she adopted and reunited with her mother, and made the mother a part of her family. And so she told me her story while I waited for my daughter to come from New York to meet me and her husband. And let me tell you, God is so good. And when she got out of the car and she hugged me, the first thing she said was, I forgive you, Mom. Mm. She said, I forgive you. I didn't even know that I needed forgiveness. Because, see, I've been wrapped up in my feelings all these years. You know what I mean? I've been wrapped up in my hurt and my pain and what happened to me. And it never dawned on me. You know, I couldn't get to that place of thinking what she was feeling. You know, because it was never an issue, because I didn't ever think I was going to ever see her again. You know what I mean? But she said, Mommy, I forgive you, and I love you. Mm-hmm. And she said, my mother told me to contact you. She gave her the information. She found the information. And she said, my mother told me that your parents made you put me up for adoption. Mm-hmm. She told me the story that I needed to get the health records and let you know that I'm okay. She lives in New York, and they're very successful. It's a beautiful story. I'm going to do a book. I keep talking to her. So she had a brother who was an addict. And look, the first 10 years that we were together, all you had a hard time finding me in Pittsburgh. Because every time you looked, she was sending me tickets. you know, mind your ticket set, you know, plane tickets, train ticket, whatever ticket, you know. At least 2-3 times a month I was in New York. And my kids here that don't never pay me no attention, they was jealous as hell. But she had a brother that was an alcoholic who I encouraged to go to meetings and this, that, and she said, Mommy, I wish I could spend more time with you. And lo and behold, we found out that he had cancer, and she ended up having to bring him to her house and help him through his transition. And I was able to move in with her and stay there with her and help her get through marrying her only adopted brother that was adopted with her. I've seen three great grandkids born to her, you know. But I have 30 great grandkids.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
25 grands. 25 grands. You talk about relationships. I got a son that he's I don't know what I call him.
A rabbit.
He's one of them bad boys. That bad boys. He thought he was cussing at me. And then they said, "Dad, shut the MF up." I'm like, "Okay, you need to get a new mother." That's all. We ain't got no conversation. Just get a new mother, cause I'm deluding you. You know, you can't talk to me like that. You can't talk to me like that. So he's still on the lockdown. You know, and I still got him blocked. But I did send him a message saying that I forgive him. Because the forgiveness is for me.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? It ain't necessarily for what he did. You know what I mean? But it's for me. It's a healing for me to let go of that hurt. Because that hurt me. When your kid tell you to shut the F up, you know, this boy, I don't know what he's on. I'm so glad that I'm not the person that I was. You know, because when I came in with a meat cleaver and an ice pick. And I had more from Canada. My girlfriend said, "I can't even get high with you. You're so busy cussing people out." She said, "We're going to jail. I'm selling drugs." But I got rid of it. But I don't know, the main, you know, one of the other needs, the other things I want to touch on is just relationship. Intimate relationships, you know, are challenging. And when you get ready to get in one, just be ready to go for a ride. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, nothing lasts forever.
Right.
You know, everything comes for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. Mm-hmm. Nobody comes in our life to stay. Mm-hmm. You know, even if it's by death that they might be. But nobody comes to stay, you know. And I've recently been out of a relationship, and it actually was the longest one. We went together for 5 years when we first came around, and then we went back together for 2 years. So he broke my record, because I had a record for not being with nobody longer than 5 years. I took pride in that. I did, because I'm just not that girl. You can tell me anything or do anything. You know, I'm okay being by myself and taking care of me. And I had twin sons, you know, and a daughter. I got these grown kids. I ain't trying to hear none of that stuff from no man. You know what I mean? But you know, my heart is still a little hurt, you know. But I know that God takes away things so that he can put things in place. You know what I mean? And I finally want God's will to be done in my life, you know. And see, because I had been separated for about 12 years. I had been in a relationship when I was out. Because I don't even kiss a man. If you ain't showing me no papers, I don't even want to kiss you. You know what I mean? I need some papers, because I want to live. I'm healthy. You know, I'm out of here 77, because I take care of me. It ain't your job. You know? And we got to be paying attention to that up in here, too. You know what I mean? Because you think you can get stuck out in the street, you can get it right in here. This is great. Or they be lying. When I first came around, people used to share at the podium, they'd be like, I have hepatitis, or I have AIDS.
You don't hear none of that no more.
Ain't nobody telling on yourself. They just passing it around. You know. So I'm gonna tell you, be careful. Beware, be careful. Be good to yourself, you know, because this is the most beautiful thing that has ever happened to me in my life. And I'm not finished yet.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? I don't have no bills. I don't have everything, you know. I'm not in debt. You know, I don't have no debt. I got peace of mind. Kids is grown. This is my space.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? This is the dream, you know, that we, when the kids grow up, we'll have a space to ourselves. It happens, but you have to make it happen. I got a one bedroom, so they can't come back.
I bought
a one bedroom. My son was in jail. I bought a one bedroom house. He's like, I need two bedrooms to come home. No, well, you better find somewhere to go. Go to halfway house or somewhere. I spent 15 years messing around here. I ain't got that kind of time. But I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank God for His grace and the program of Narcotics Anonymous for helping my heart and my soul and my spirit. You know, for helping me to grow up and be a better woman. You know what I mean? For me being able to give my daughters and my sons. I mean, they all are doing well. You know, I got one grandson that just go to Central Catholic. He made number one championship, first place state championship for poetry and interpretive reading. And he made second place state championship for national. You know what I mean? In Central Catholic. He got so many awards, they named the award after him. They never had nobody in the running like him. And the piece that he recited was John Coltrane. And I'm spending more time with my kids now. For 33 years, I ain't got 30 hours to sit up in the meetings. You know, I need to spend some time with my kids and my grandkids and be grateful that they're around. And that ain't nobody in jail, ain't nobody sick. You know, man, let me enjoy it.
Right.
Well, I want to thank you again for listening. God bless you all.
All right, everybody. So, thank you, Irene, for sharing with us. Our second speaker is Steve C. from E-ANA, the East End area of Narcotics Anonymous.
East End.
Hi, everybody. My name is Steve, and I am an addict.
Thank you.
What papers do I need, Irene? Thank you, Irene. You know, first, when I was driving over, I called my wife and I said, did I tell you what I'm speaking on? And she said, no. And I said, relationships. And she went, good luck with that. That's after a 28, 29-year marriage. Good luck with that. So when I first got called to speak about relationships, I immediately said, oh, my marriage. And then I started thinking. I said, whoa, wait a minute. There are a lot of things. This is like, my whole life is all different relationships. And I want to try to look at how those relationships were before I used, when I used, early recovery, and later recovery. And how things hopefully have changed. And I started thinking, wow, relationships with my family, my friends, my sponsor, my sponsees, my boss, people who work for me, society, my God, I mean, all those entities I have something to do with every single day. So how did I deal with them all? And when I start with before I ever got high, I want to explain how I was brought up, because the relationship there was in that pot that I could stir to make great soup for an active addiction. And the scene was, my sister had show business talent. So around the house were costumes, 8x10 glossies, tap shoes, straw hats and canes, and all that stuff. Because she was like 6, 7, 8 years old, and they were taking her to New Jersey and all kinds of places, you know, to do her shtick. Now, I'm around the house thinking, you know, like, I'm getting the message a little bit that, you know, maybe she's a little better than me, and my mother is out with her on the road. You know, so I had those feelings of abandonment, which were really deep. And then, lo and behold, above the fireplace appeared an oil painting of my sister. I was like, whoa, you know, where's mine? Oh, you couldn't sit still. And I was putting all this stuff in the pot to stir up. It was grinding around in my stomach. And add in, I'm short, I'm stupid, I have anxiety, I have depression, all that stuff. And, wow. You know, and growing up, I was always Jill's brother. You know, I didn't have my own identity. So this was all great to start an addiction. So those relationships I had, my father, I hardly had anything, because he owned a bar, by the way, and the Gold Door on Frankstown Avenue. And he always worked, so my relationship with him was pretty much nil. And with my mother, you know, she wasn't around. So it was very strange. So when I got high the first time, that relationship with it was marijuana was so fantastic, because all that shit and all that garbage disappeared. It was like magic. It was friggin' magic. And how was I going to stop? I mean, so I know for me, that first time I crossed over that imaginary line that we talk about from social drinker, social user, if there is such a thing, to an addict. And I had no idea, of course. So that feeling of being freed of all those bad feelings in my gut was like a miracle. And that relationship I had with that drug was love. Of course, it turned into hate later. But it was a love relationship. And the relationships I had, I grew up as a hippie. And that peace and love was great, and we thought we were going to change the world. We really did. And the only problem was that none of us really knew is we all got addicted. And that changed the whole game, because then it was every man for himself. And relationship changed to self-centeredness, scheming, conniving, stealing, doing everything that was negative and bad to help fuel that addiction. And the relationships that had any sustenance to them before now were like situational, you know, and what do I get from you? And always thinking, how can I get the most? Like, if we were getting a six-pack, I would think, how can I get 4 and you get 2? You know, the thinking like that was all changing. And as I was getting sicker and sicker, and those relationships were, we're all in the same boat. You know, we're all getting sick together. And I never really thought about how is this going to change. I was having a good time. It was all great. And I didn't know it, but I was also treating my anxiety and my depression. So that relationship with other people was always kind of shaded, because I couldn't get along, and that, I mean, that well. And I always had something, you know, I always wanted that drug or drink to keep me as good as you. Because no matter who you were, it seemed like you were better than me. I don't care who you were. But if I could have something inside of me, I could even the ball playing field, you know, and I could feel as good, usually better. But, you know, that's what I wanted. So that addiction for me lasted 10 years, you know, and it always got worse. So those relationships through that addiction, I had the relationship with the drugs and the alcohol. I had a relationship with my folks, which was nothing. I was hiding. My relationships were bobbing and weaving, trying to, like, get out of the way of people detecting me, but everybody knew anyhow. And I want to talk about a relationship with the drug that I had. Because a drug that I had that was very common in my day was called Percodan. And those were little yellow pills. They were round, yellow, and they said Endo 122 on them. And they were beautiful. When I had them in my hand, life was wonderful. I mean, could not be better. And I'd look at, I'd take the bottle out of my pocket and after waking up, and I'd count them, and I'd put them back in the jar, and the pill bottle, and then I'd take them out again and count them. What I was doing, I was planning my life around these little yellow pills. And it was sick that was the relationship I had. And the wanting and getting and using never stopped in my brain for 10 years. And what a miracle that it has. Another relationship was with all the people in my life. And one of my friends had a birthday party for me. And, normal birthday party people, we're all smoking at that time, drinking, smoking, and doing the party thing. And it came time for the cake. They brought the cake out, and it was round and yellow with Endo 122 written on top. It's a Percodan cake. And everyone's wishing me happy birthday, and hey, many more. No one gave me a Percodan. I was hoping they were in the cake. And then they gave me a gift, and it was a t-shirt, yellow, again with printed on it, Endo, like a pill, with Endo 122. I got my Percodan t-shirt. And again, everyone's wishing me happy birthday. I think the story is hilarious, but I also realize how sick it was. But the sickness was, happy birthday, Steve, the Percodan addict. And the 20, 30 people in that room were in the same boat as me. There was nothing unusual to give somebody a Percodan cake. It was just the way we lived. And all the people in my life, so all those relationships were all the same. And as sick as they were, they are what they are. They were what they were. And it just kept on going. I mean, life is different now, but I remember bumming quarters in Geneva on the Lake just to get another bottle of Boone's Farm wine, which was a buck. Mm-hmm. Top shelf. It's a Bob Ripple. That's the thing. So those relationships went on for 10 years, and they kept becoming more and more depleted. I was getting sicker and sicker, physically, mentally, and spiritually, and I was becoming like an empty human being. Just having like a horse with blinders on and a feed bag, just chomping on the feed, that's his world. And that was my world, becomes very small when you're using. And my sister was trying to come to my the one that was the actress that I hated, I actually had a baseball bat. I was gonna knock her out. I despised her. She took my mother away. I had all those lousy feelings. And she was trying to help all through my addiction. And she said, come on up to New York, live with me. And I said, that's a great idea. I was starting to have a little bit of a relationship with her, but I'm still using. And she took me up there. I lasted about a week. Then I'm in a doctor's office, walked out with a script of Percodan, and as we say, if nothing changes, nothing changes. And lasted X amount of months. I'm back in Pittsburgh. And now my relationship, just with everything, is getting so depleted. With society. All I am looking to do is get over. One day I'm at the Pitt Student Union. I don't know why. I didn't go to school there. And I'm sitting there, and some guy was trying to get out of a parallel parking space, and he hit the car behind him, and I walked up to him and said, hey man, you hit my car. Wasn't my problem. I was trying to get a few bucks out of them, and it's just, the relationship with myself was the sick one, and that's the one I really need to look at as far as how it was and how it changed with this program. And it's just, I don't have to politely ask you if I'm in your house if I could use your bathroom. And right in the medicine cabinet praying to find something good. So that lifestyle was the relationship I had with society, with the world, that was nothing but take, take, take. What can I get? What can I steal? You know, me, me, me. And self-centeredness is certainly a problem that I continue to deal with up to this day. So, my sister again. Come on, she's in L.A. now. Come on out to L.A. I'd really like to, you know, I think it'd be good for you. And we all know that geographical cures don't work. Because wherever I go, I take Steve with me. And ditto, same exact thing. Last about a week, doctor's office, walk out with a script of perks, and I'm off to the races. And I really thought it would be good because there's palm trees and sun and ocean, and, you know, it's beautiful. And I really thought my life would get better, and I wanted it to get better. I didn't want to feel this way, but I was so empty inside and running, just running. I don't know what I was running from, but I just couldn't stand my life and what was happening. My folks wanted me to come home for a visit. I hadn't been home for a few years, and I figured, I'll get really tan, you know? And when I get home, everyone will say, hey, how's L.A.? I'll go, oh, man, it's great. You know, look at me. It's so great, I want to commit suicide. It's great, you know? And that's the truth. That relationship I had with myself, whatever higher power, the God in my life was, God, please help me to get out of this. You know, it wasn't the God of understanding that I have now. And I got a lucky break. One of those guys who I had gotten high with from day one, from my whole addiction, that I was as close as you could be with someone that you're using with, had gone to rehab. And it was like, oh my God. You know, I was on the phone with him and I couldn't believe it. My first thought was, that's great. He really needs it. I wanted to get off the phone as soon as I could because I knew he was the type of person in my life that he was more of a leader, I was more of a follower, and he could get me to do whatever. And I knew he was going to try to get me to go to this rehab, you know, and I can't do it. I can't live drug free. I can't do that. I can't survive out there in the world without something in me because I'm less than human. I have all these frailties. I'm anxiety, depression. I used to see guys walking to work with briefcases, and I think, how the hell do they do that? How do they do that? It intimidated me like I can't even tell you. Who did I end up? I ended up the guy with the tie and the briefcase. I became the director of the methadone clinic for UPMC, Kelly Street. And that was one of my careers. And yeah, it's funny because that relationship with myself completely changed. They even trusted me around the methadone. I was scared to death around the methadone. I didn't want to get near the thing. But never took a drop. I say that honestly. So I'm back in Pittsburgh, and the time comes. I'm sitting at my parents' kitchen table, and the one I grew up at, and my buddy's there, my parents are there, and they, of course, start 12-stepping me to go to rehab. And, of course, my instant reaction is my relationship with myself is, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to deal with any of the feelings, any of the problems, and I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't live out there without something. I know I can't. It was a lie, but that's what I thought. And somehow, some way, during that meeting, I got over the great fear I had, and I said, yes, I'll go. And at that moment, my life and the relationship with me and the world started to get better. At that moment, because I let somebody else tell me what to do. And that was it. In rehab, they said many things to me, but they said, if the decisions you had made were so great, you wouldn't have ended up in a hospital for 28 days for drugs and alcohol, would you? All right, you're right again. They were right all the time. So they said many things to me, but one of the main things they said was, when you leave here, there's no excuse anymore to pick up a drink or a drug. So now I've had 44 years to think about that. And in 44 years, lots of bad things have happened, just like in your life. Mom died, dad died, marital issues, money problems, insecure, anxiety and depression continue. And every time something lousy, shitty happens, I have a decision to make. Do I do it the way I used to do it, or do I do it the way you guys taught me to do it? And up until today, I've done it the way you guys have taught me to do it. And it works. Well, how about that? You know, I mean, it's incredible. So that those relationships, and especially the relationship with me and how I run my life, have gotten so much better. By the way, there is no halo. That's because I'm bald and there's a little shiny. Okay? And I need to say that because no matter what time I have, it means nothing if I'm not doing the right things. So I made it through rehab, and thank God. So I want to say, you know, the relationships in my life and the way I have gotten through life, at 8 years clean, somebody detected that was close to me that I'm not doing so well. And you got to take a look at this or you may use. And as a result of that, I ended up in a long weekend rehab. It was like an ACOA rehab. And it saved me. I had that feeling that I don't deserve a good life. And I don't deserve the good stuff. And I don't deserve, you know, what other people seem to have. And at that weekend, I formed a relationship with those people and that therapy to make me understand, I do deserve this. I do deserve this. You know, no matter all that shit that went on in my gut, you know, my mom loves Joe Moore, I'm short, I'm stupid, I can't do this, I can't do that, I'm not as good as you. It was bullshit. It was bullshit. And I thought I had needed drugs and alcohol to live, but I didn't. I didn't. I'm not going to say it was easy. And it still is not easy all the time, but I do it. You know, the relationship I have with other people in the program, what a blessing. I mean, I can't believe it. I mean, it's almost my own therapy group. You know, I have a problem, I call my sponsor. And I instantly feel better. You know, that relationship is amazing. You know, to be able to trust somebody totally and not have any problem sharing anything. You know, and being able to feel good about it afterwards. And relationships with other people. It's not, I'm not like constantly looking to get over and beat you and, you know, all the bad habits. Now, I occasionally have to make amends to the bank person or the, you know, person that waited on me. I get a little ugly sometimes. And I have to make amends, you know? And these are parts of me that I have to continue to look at. My relationship with the steps, my relationship with the traditions, my relationship with everything that I've done. Service in the program, I mean, has saved my butt. Those relationships with other people in service have made me feel like I'm more in the middle. Because as I was taught very early on, if I'm sitting on the edge, it's real easy to fall off. In the middle, chances are someone's going to catch me by the time I get over there. And all those simple things I learned in those first relationships going to meetings still apply today. And they're very simple, actually. I mean, in rehab, they said you have a disease. So I had to form a relationship with that disease. And then they said there's no cure. And I said, oh boy, that's greatness. And then they said, but we can teach you how to manage it, and you can go out there and live a normal life, as if you had diabetes or heart disease. You know what? It was so simple, but so true. That's what they did. They taught me how to manage it. Then you guys picked up the slack and taught me how to continue that management. And that's what it's all about. So I'm married 28 years, 29, whatever it is. And, you know, it all seems like a blur to me anyhow. But, difficult. many of the times it's screw you, I can do this on my own, you know, what do I need this for? My attitude comes right out, my stinking thinking comes right out, and my independence, because I'm pretty independent. And I've had a lot to learn with them, and I should have just done a half hour on taking her inventory. That would have been much better, right? You hear that? But it's better and much more difficult to take my inventory, which is what this is all about. And my character defects have survived. But they stare me in the face sometimes, and I have to work on them, because that's a relationship all in itself about, you know, how do I handle the defects I have on a day-to-day basis, but yet be okay out there and do the right things and try to be the right kind of person. So the gratitude I have is knowing that my relationship as being an addict is fine. I have no issues with that at all. In fact, it's been a blessing, because it brought me to this point where I have this way to try to improve myself. And my relationship with my sister is unbelievable. I want to tell you a quick story. I have no idea what the time is. So the oil painting of my sister hung over the fireplace, and that was the great Jill, you know. Yeah. And mine was in some artist's mind somewhere. So when I had many years clean, I don't know how many, I went up to visit my sister and her husband, and they said, we have a birthday gift for you. Oh, all right, thanks. And they take me in the other room, and something behind the sheet. Yeah. They take the sheet off, oil painting of me.
Yes, sir.
Unbelievable. I mean, the story went full circle on the relationship of someone who's using to someone who got clean, working a life, a program, and allowed that relationship to flourish. Not only that, we've been in business together for 43 years in real estate, and never once have we had a problem. It's amazing.
Wow.
And it's amazing that to me, and I love her. I wish I had 10 of her. I really do. But I only have one. And so that relationship where I wanted to kill her had turned into something that was so beautiful and so rich in my life. You know, and I think about my folks and how proud they would be that, you know, that I was able to, like, get through what I got through in a dignified way and continue that in hopefully a dignified way, where I can be of service to society, myself, my higher power, NA, my relationships, you know, everything that crosses me, I make a difference in some way. I continue to do service, and it's an interesting thing, because that's something that has saved my butt. When I had 1 year clean, Dr. Tversky, I don't know if you know who that is, but he started Gateway Rehab. He called me, because he was very close to a lot of people in my neighborhood. He called me and said, I'd like you to do me a favor. I was like, do you a favor? Oh, my God. Dr. Tversky wants me to do him a favor. He was like a god, you know? And I was like, yes, sir, yes, sir. And I started this meeting called the Gateway Rehab Winter Circle Meeting up at St. Francis on the detox. I'd like you to go up on Monday nights at 6 and help support the meeting. Sure, Doc. So I started to go up to detox at St. Francis at 6 o'clock, and it was with the patients. And so as time went on, I kept going to the meeting. And you know how you see it in the meetings here. People come, people go, people disappear, and I kept going. And then all of a sudden, St. Francis closed, and I was sort of the only guy left, and I took it to Braddock, and did it at Braddock, and then they tore down that hospital, so I took it to Mercy. And I was the last guy standing. So for 43 years or so, I've been doing this Monday night meeting in detox. And it's been enriching. And now, and recently, every time I go, I go, I'm not doing this anymore. You know, and I keep going. But that's the part of life of just one little thing of giving back, you know, that has changed, where it was all take, take, take. What can I get? And hopefully that has changed, you know, a lot in my life and has allowed me to continue to try to grow. And this is how it happened, though. I could not have done it any other way that I know of. I mean, when I was in L.A., I tried Jews for Jesus. It didn't work. I tried S, where you sit in a room with 1,000 people and they take your money and tell you how, you know, psychiatry, all that stuff, you know. Yeah. And, you know, I know this works. I know what it has done for me. I know how it has changed my relationships. And that's what I need to know. If it worked for me, it worked for anybody. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Should I do the open podium?
No.
It's like, no? Okay.
Because,
yeah.
We could do it for a few minutes.
It's up to you. I mean, you're the boss. Because we have till 4:50. I don't know. You're the boss. Be the boss. Make a decision. Be the boss. Be the boss.
We can do it. We fill up the time. But, you know, leave 5 minutes just for.
Okay. All right, everybody. What we're going to do now is we have 15 minutes left. If anybody would like to share, respond to the speakers, or like just do an open podium kind of sharing session, that the floor is open. You can share at will. Yeah.
What's up, everybody? Rich Recovered Addict.
Hey, Rich.
Thank you very much, both of you, for your experience, your strength, your hope. Man, to hear 44 years, like that's possible. I couldn't even imagine 44 minutes without using. I actually had to Google what Perkinam was. It's cool because I was just on the same shit. I was on Percocet. Right. Just Tylenol and aspirin. Oxys, man. Oxys. Legal dope. And my story was like, I had that endless supply until it wasn't endless, and then it became a problem, like you were saying. And what was funny was I came to this meeting because, you know, relationships and recovery, I thought it was going to be like you were saying, like I'm talking about my marriage, and had a successful relationship. I just started a relationship with someone in recovery about 4 months ago. I was like, all right, I'll get some advice, you know, what to do, what not to do. But it was all about self, from the two speakers, all about self, and that's where it starts, with myself, with ourself. Because I didn't love myself for the longest time. Hated myself. If I had the guts to kill myself, I would have done it. But I couldn't do anything about it. I wanted to die for a long time. Thankfully, never did it. And I'm here today, you know, to be of service. Like you were saying, how you give back like every single Monday for 44 years. Like that's amazing. Like I do H&I work. H&I service because I got the message of NA in H&I. And as long as one person gets it, then that's it. That's all I care about. And so far, I know I got one person so far. It's even on my commitment, still on Zoom. 7 o'clock Tuesday nights. And it's amazing because that one guy, as soon as he got out of the facility, came to a young people's meeting in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and was like, hey, Rich, like, just want to thank you for leaving that, you know, for leaving that meeting, for chairing that meeting in SOBA. It was amazing. I'm like, oh, shit, you're from the screen. Like, I kind of recognized his voice, but not his face, and he recognized me immediately. And I was like, damn, that's crazy. Like, he took the suggestions and ran with it. And when I got my treatment facility, I got started my recovery in a psych ward for 3 weeks. Still had to go back out and do more research for 10 months until I finally surrendered. And that one person makes it for me because he's like immediately like, hey, I'm here because of you. And I was about to give up on Zoom because I was like, what am I doing? Like, they're sitting on the screen, half of them look like they're asleep and shit. And I'm like, but that would have been me too. Like, they're detoxing. Like, give them a break, right? And but this one guy comes back and he shares his story so many times. I almost make him. I push him every week to share because he was on that couch watching the same screen, listening to the same people. So I just hope the next person can get it. Because this life that I have right now is so much better than what I had beforehand. So I just love to share.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Sumit. I'm an addict.
Yes. What's your name?
I'm here from India, visiting all the United States. And,
nice.
Saw this convention, which was fitting in between, and going back home next week. But it's been interesting. I mean, you know, what? Sorry to cross share, but when I came here, I was like, I thought you were going to talk about the relationship with your wife, girlfriend, mistress, everybody. And I was like, that's the area I'm struggling in, you know, because I also had a relationship with somebody in recovery. They told me not to, and so I did. Yeah, lasted for a month. Yeah. And my relationship with myself got so unmanageable. And I mean, thank God for that. Because if it doesn't get unmanageable, I don't quit. So, or I leave, you know. And yeah, I mean, this is the area I'm struggling in. I just wanted to put it out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm an addict named Barbara.
Hi, Barbara.
I really appreciate both of you ladies and gentlemen sharing. When I got clean, you know, my sponsor said to me, have three relationships. And one with yourself, one with your higher power, and one with yourself, your sponsor. Sorry. I was like, that just went out of my head. And I developed that, you know, through step work, through tradition work, and, you know, through service work. But if he hadn't told me that, I would have been, I think, out there just continuing to try to find, okay, what's this relationship? You know, what's the magic romantic relationships want to fix me. And so when I start, you know, going on down that trail, it's like, okay, three relationships, Barbara, self, God, and sponsor. And then it brings me back on track. And, you know, whatever happens, happens. But what has happened in my life is that I have had and continue to have amazing relationships. Amazing. And, you know, I have a daughter that is not in my life right now. And it's okay because of Narcotics Anonymous, because of that first step, it's called acceptance. And then I have another daughter who was a runner, you know, when she was 17 years old, and oh my God, she was driving me out the wall. But anyhow, today she's 45 years old, and she calls me her mom. You know, so it's like through step work, through tradition work, relationships built. You know, and we can't stop them from doing it. But I gotta keep coming back. I gotta continue to do the things like what Steve said, what Narcotics Anonymous tells me to do. You know, and sometimes you get pissed off, and sometimes it's like, oh, okay, I can do that. But I have to have someone to remind me, that's the way of this program, remind me of who I am and what I can do. Because I tell myself all the time the things that I can't do. So I need you guys in my life to tell me what I can. And I can have a relationship with anyone in the entire world, including a cat, which I learned to love cats in recovery, dogs in recovery. I have a lady that I sponsored that I do not kill insects today, but she has a relationship with insects. And I take pictures of insects and send them to her. So it's an amazing, amazing experience.
Richard, I'm an addict.
Hey, Richard.
First, Irene, I love your story. And you're 77. You look amazing. For one.
Right?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. So, be proud. You're losing it. Like, losing your child when you were young, that's terrible. But I'm glad it worked out the way it did. It's amazing. It just shows the blessings of this program, just the blessings that God can give. I'm hoping I get there sometime. I lost my son a long time ago to my behaviors, but I'm working on that right now. I understand, like, I relate with you too, because I mean, I'm bold. It's like I used to be angry about it and stuff too. And I've been working on myself these past 18 months. Like, it's been such a freaking journey. Like, learning to love myself and starting doing. A year ago, right now, I would not be doing something like this. A year ago, right now, I'd be on my couch staring at my ceiling, hating life, trying to figure out what to do. So I know. Not a relationship with my sponsor, great guy, his wife, great woman. It's just these relationships are building, like, it's wonderful because I'm coming alive for once. Like, it's just, the blessings of this program, I love it. That's all I can say.
We have time for one more. Okay, no. We will close with a reading, and that is We Do Recover.
I'm Christine, I'm an addict.
Hi, Christine.
We do recover. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is it left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thank you. All right, so we're going to close the meeting now. Thank you to the speakers. We will end with the third step statement. I would say prayer. Statement. The third step statement. Take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live. Clean. Thank you. Thank you, Irene. Thank you.